we were saying we've just come straight from the Michael Moore documentary, so it's such a different approach to, you know.
How is that? I'm trying to see
it. It's powerful. It's emotionally powerful, but it's such a different approach to telling a story, his and yours. You know the difference in the approach, but I'm curious to know why this particular approach is the one that you wanted to take.
Well, for me, you know, I think there's a certain stigma that surrounds somebody from quote-unquote Hollywood coming into the realm of science and an issue like global, as complicated as global warming. It was a very conscious effort on my part from the onset of the film to be able to approach this as simply a concerned citizen that, by the mere fact that I am an actor, might bring in a different audience and pose questions to the scientific community and the experts on the issue and give them free rein to speak about the realities of this and environmental, you know, problem that we have going on. And I wanted to be involved in the film but have a certain layer of detachment in the sense that I didn't want to position myself as any kind of an expert that's gone to school on this for decades. So it was important for me to do that and have this film be taken seriously in that regard, because I was involved in another documentary in the late 90s where I interviewed President Clinton, and I went to the White House and talked about the Kyoto Protocol, and I asked questions, and ultimately, because it was involved with the network from the onset, it became, was fitted into the format in which it needed to become an argument. So it wasn't whether the fact that the scientific community, you know, over 90% of the scientific community believes that global warming is a reality. That wasn't the argument. It was having to put two people arguing the same point back and forth, and it became moot at the end of the day. So this was really a homemade movie in the sense that we wanted to get private financing and be able to have nobody's agenda a part of it from the onset. No network, no studio, and be able to present it and hopefully distribute and sell the reality and the truth of what's going on according to the experts, the people who really know what they're talking about.
What's your reading of the way the problem, the way this whole situation described in the film, how it is being or has been processed and accepted by the different generations? Like, have you gotten a sense that the Gen Ys and Gen Xers are more accepting, more willing to go with what you're saying here, as opposed to boomers, or, you know, is there any kind of reading on a generational level that you?
I think it's been a tremendous reaction from this, and I'll let him talk about that as well. But I think in my mere 10 years as a quote unquote environmental activist, I guess you could call it that, I've seen in particular since An Inconvenient Truth, it become a discussion in a worldwide format and brought to the front of the media's attention and the public's attention unlike ever before, and particularly in this last year. And it was specifically because Al Gore, in that movie, An Inconvenient Truth, was able to convey the science in a way that people were emotionally affected by it. And it wasn't just words and statistics and numbers and temperatures. It became a human issue, and it became something that affected us as people. And that's been the biggest challenge, I think, with the environmental movement for the longest time, is how do you translate that into getting people to actually take action? And I think, yes, this generation is more aware of it than ever before, and I think it's a hot topic, and there's a danger with it being a hot topic, because, of course, heat fades, and this is something that's going to take many years and has to go beyond one individual country or one individual religion or one government. It has to be a worldwide effort. You know, it has to be a worldwide consciousness, and that's what these scientists are trying to say in this movie. But yes, I
go ahead, David. Well,
this is David Orr, by the way, if you didn't catch
it. I teach at Oakwood College in Ohio, and I spend a good bit of time on various college campuses. I can tell you that this generation of college students was, for a long time, thought to be apolitical.
Climate change. When you say this, we're referring to?
Well, I mean college students generally for the past 15 or so years. There was no issue that really caught them, like, say, the Vietnam War. did 30 years ago. Climate change is really changing their political stance, and they are coming out of the woodwork on this issue. This has gotten to be huge. There's a Yale dropout by the name of Billy Parrish, who's organized climate action groups across the country. Bill McKibben, the writer, organized this effort called Step It Up. Even Goodstein, an economist, has got a thing called Focus the Nation. And I've gone to gatherings all over the country on this issue, but this has galvanized the public in a way that is really quite extraordinary. Leo's point about topics come and go for people. And what this generation is going to be called on to do is something more like a thousand-year heroism. They've got to start a longer journey to efficiency and renewables. And it's not going to be a quick fix to this, but there are clearly things that we can do and begin doing. But I see this as coming, this is an issue that crosses generations and crosses political perspectives. It's the ultimate political solvent in that sense.
Leo, you talked about people maybe being suspicious of a Hollywood actor speaking up about subjects. On the other hand, it seems now that you feel that celebrity has become a kind of currency that can really be invested in advocacy in a way that it hasn't been done before. I mean, it just seems to be happening a lot. I mean, if you look back to when Marlon Brando was doing it, it was like he was like some wild renegade doing this stuff, but now it's just part of, is it not just part of what you guys have to do?
I wouldn't say what we have to do. I feel happy to be a part of that aspect of the Hollywood community in the sense that, you know, like you said, they've been at the forefront of the peace movement or the civil rights movement throughout history. And I think that certainly issues like what's going on in Africa and global warming, we've been very outspoken about that. And that puts us on the chopping block to be able to, for a lot of people, to be able to discredit us in a lot of ways. But I think that what you have to ultimately look at is we're coming from, I think the majority of us are coming from the heart on this issue and have good intentions, and that's ultimately where it comes from, you know.
I didn't mean that it was currency that enhanced your own image. I mean, there was something you could use.
No, but it's a good thing to clarify because, you know, I know that, you know, ultimately there could be a backlash from that. And that's, again, going back to the point of saying, you know, in a culture nowadays where so much is focused on superficial aspects of Hollywood and what it is to be a rich person and go out and have fun and all these things, to do a film like this where we're getting to highlight people talking, scientists talking about the truth, and the truth is scary on this issue. It feels good anyway. It feels rewarding for me is what I can say. To be able to give these people a platform like this in a movie like this.
You know, to weigh in on that issue, the people who study Earth system science and labor out there and write in these obscure journals and publish data-rich reports and so forth, there isn't any real way to convey that to the public. In a way, it's resonant to the public. Somehow it has to become art. In this case, the most powerful art form is cinematographic. So what Leo has done is to lend his talent, expertise as a filmmaker and an artist in that sense to translate what is otherwise just unbelievably complicated and in some ways disputed information, but it's always difficult to convey that to the public. And I see this as a kind of a necessary step in our time to begin to use artists like Leo, willing to make science an art form, make it resonant with the public mind.
Which, between the two of you, if I can ask both the same question, who do you like the best in terms of the crop of presidential contenders for 08? And are you kind of Obama man? What are you?
I haven't attached. I mean, John Kerry, I went up to 15 different states and talked about environmental issues because I believed in his environmental policy. I haven't affiliated myself with any candidate as of yet. I've been so focused on this movie for the next election, And you should talk about what you're doing with politicians now as well.
Yeah, I think it's too early to make a choice, but what we're, a group of us are putting together or have put together a climate action plan for the next administration's first 100 days to follow Roosevelt's 100 days. Mm. So from the moment you're elected to the end of the 100th day, what do you have to do on climate to get things right? And long story short, what climate needs to be dead central in administration's planning, from personnel choices to statutory law, regulatory law, all the complications of government. When they take control of the machinery and levers of power, they don't have a lot of time. I mean, the handwriting on from climate sciences, Jim Hansen says 10 years to get it right. And two of those years are already spent. Let's assume he's half wrong. Let's assume it's 20 years. So what's a president do relative to climate issues? And to see it not as an issue, but as the linchpin that connects lots of other issues, economic, security, equity, fairness, decency.
So, are you going to put this first 100 days suggestion up on the site somewhere?
Well, it is. There is a, I think it's climateaction.org, so it's up. But the plan will be available to everybody, Democrat, Republican, Independent, who's running for the presidency in 08. We'll just see how people respond.
When Al Gore came to Toronto to speak, there were people who were complaining about the carbon cost of him traveling around to talk to people. There was also talk about the usage of light bulbs in his home and how much power his home was using. In a sense, I think making a film like this perhaps opens you up to attacks of that sort. I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about how you came to environmental consciousness and when you talk to people, what are you telling them that you're doing? As an example.
Well, I do live my life in the green ways best I can. You know, I do travel a lot, but I have carbon offsets. I have solar power. I drive a hybrid car. I do all of those things. That, you know, I do want to practice what I preach, but there becomes a danger zone with that, because then, you know, even with Al Gore, I mean, I'm sure he conducts his life in a similar manner, but then becomes about attacking an individual who's trying to do something that's bigger than that, ultimately. Because all these things aren't 100% readily available to the public. And that's what it's ultimately about, is pushing these corporations and industries and governments to integrate environmental policy into everyday living standards. And I think that's the bigger issue, you know what I'm saying? For people to target Al Gore on the way he lives or the way he conducts his life with the efforts that he's making on an issue like this, and then not to talk about what the oil industry does, is pretty unbelievable. And I think it's a farce, ultimately. It's a way to convolute the issue once again, which has been done so much in the past and been done so much in the environmental issue that I've seen in the past.
Do you feel some irony in, you know, presenting a film about the ravages of our excesses and our greed, and at a film festival which has sort of become somewhat synonymous with those excesses?
All I know is, speaking again about an inconvenient truth, what's most important here is the fact that it is one of the greatest worldwide media formats to launch a film like this, and that's the way you want to get the message out. Like I said before, how many people actually saw An Inconvenient Truth, to the amount of awareness that has been transformed in the culture and the public and the media and corporations as a result of that film coming out? It's a much different way. The fact that they took that film seriously and the media took that science seriously was the biggest, was the largest thing that came out of making the movie in the first place.
Let's ask a quick question.
Okay. Just a quick background question. How did you get together with the filmmakers? I know that they said that
we did
two films for your one.
Yeah, I did a.
How did you guys find each other?
I transformed my environmental website, my website, my name, into becoming an environmental one. And so I wanted to just narrate some short clips on issues like global warming, and we have this other one called Water Planet. And we had such a great creative experience with them, and I also realized that they had access to some of the people on the forefront of environmental issues out there that I didn't have access to. And we just started working together. It's been a 3-year process. We've got hundreds and hundreds of hours of footage of them talking, as well as you know, hundreds of hours stock footage from great nature documentaries that have been done in the past, and it was a matter of just putting a plot to that, and we just really worked together. Lila Nutty, Connors, and I worked on this for many years now, and it was just sort of a natural sort of homemade process to make this movie. And that's what we really wanted to make this movie, a homemade film, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's why I said this before, we didn't have a network or anyone involved from the onset. No, there was no agenda, and nor was there a political agenda in it as well. We wanted to have this be a human story and not blaming a specific political party or, you know.
There are clips,
of course. You cannot, it would be a lie to not show some individuals that have been responsible in a lot of ways, but ultimately we wanted it to be, like you said, not an issue of right or left, but a human issue.
Can I get a shot of you before you
leave? Sure.
Thank you, guys.
And one more.
Yeah. Should I take these sunglasses off?
Sure. Sure.
Okay. One, two, and something happened. Okay. Got it.
Could I actually get one of you and David?
Yeah, sure. David, you want to come here? Should we sit or stand?
Stand. Stand.
The Tom in the background?
Yeah.
We'll look here to the right first.
I'm getting a bad spot.
Right there. This is how we do this, David.
This is sort of like the red carpet, but a little smaller.
Welcome to show business.
Thank you. That one right there, right?
Yeah, okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming.
Good luck with
you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You.
Thanks,
guys. Thanks.
Hey, good to meet you. You're the Canadian here?
I am. There's two of us here.
Oh, two.
Canadian as
so,
well.
And good to meet you guys. Thanks.
Yeah, you too.
Bye.
I was interviewing somebody at Sundance once about working conditions in the film world, and I was sort of expressing sympathy with,
hello?
Like, long hours on film sets or something, and he said, oh, are you Canadian? I said, yeah. Why? Because I'm really sympathetic.